What do the Coca-Cola pop and pour sound effect and the Atari video game's audio logo have in common? They were both created by Suzanne Chani, a pioneer in electronic music. Chani got her master's in music composition at the University of California, Berkeley in 1970. And that was where she met a synthesizer designer named Don Buchla. That meeting changed Suzanne Chani's life. She tells Steve Paulson why the synthesizer had such an impact on her.
The synthesizer, even though we didn't call it that back then, gave me control. I could hear the music. I could make it. I could be in it. It was mine. Nobody was between me and it. That was very liberating. The other thing was just the romance of the sound. When I was young, I had chronic earaches, and I always had to wear things in my ears and bathing caps, and everything was muffled. And I remember the first time I heard in the swimming pool the sound of the water when I took off my bathing cap, and all that crinkling high frequency and sparkling sound. And to me, just the sound was so overwhelming. So to meet this electronic medium where I could make the sound of sparkling water or whatever else was, you know, just a natural fit. The reason I went into commercial work was so that I could afford to fund my own recordings. Because I had gone to record labels all over the world, you know, in Europe and the United States, and they would say, well, what, you don't sing? You're a girl. Where's the guitar? So I learned early on that I was going to have to make my own way.
Some of the commercial work you did has stayed with us over the years. I mean, you made some famous audio tracks, one being the Pop and Pour Coca-Cola logo. Can you tell me about that, how you came up with that sound?
I knew that advertising had budgets. I called McCann Erickson, which was the largest agency, repeatedly for a year to get an appointment with the music director, and never could. I mean, I was canceled. I was stood up. I was sent away. And finally, I was so angry that when he didn't show up for the appointment, I said, "Where is he?" It was Billy Davis, and they said, "Well, he's in the studio." And I said, "Where is the studio?" And I marched over to the studio and walked into the session, and they were doing a Coca-Cola jingle. And believe it or not, there was a little space in that jingle of several seconds. And he looked at me and he said, "Can you do something in there?" And I said, "Yes." And it was for radio. And I said, "Well, are you going to use it just for this spot or more spots?" And so I thought, well, if it's for more spots, I don't want it to have a tonal center. I want it to be able to work any place. And so I thought, well, what about bubbles? You know, because there's no pitch center and you could just sweep up and it sounds refreshing and does all this. So right there, we came up with this idea of doing the pop and pour, which was the sound of the Coke bottle opening. You know, it was like winning the lottery. I had no idea up until then, until, you know, I started getting checks. The musicians' union said, you know, every time it's used in a new spot, you get a check. And they used it in hundreds and hundreds of spots.
Well, how did you actually make the sound? Because you didn't record the sound of liquid being poor, did you? I mean, you made this entirely synthetically?
The thing about harmonics is that they're all musically related. So the harmonic series is a very musical series. And if you pick off these harmonics in a filter, a bandpass filter that is sweeping up, and then you put a little envelope on that as it sweeps, you get the bubbles. Then for the fizz, you take white noise, and the filter at that time could be frequency modulated. And so I would just frequency modulate the white noise with more white noise, and I got the fizz. When you work in sound design, your ear analyzes all the little ingredients. You separate them out, and then you rebuild them. And that was the type of work that I did.
It's fascinating to hear you say this, because I'm guessing that most musicians, most composers probably don't break down sound to this degree.
If you worked with analog synthesis and early computer synthesis, that's how you were trained. There was something called Fourier analysis that said that every sound in the universe can be broken down into sine waves. You know, that there are these building blocks of sound. And then you got something like FM, which said there are musical relationships between certain mathematically related tones that if you multiply them, you get a very musical result, timbres. So in the modular synthesizer, the analog synthesizer, you had modules, and each module specialized. You could add tones, you could filter them, you could filter them in a variety of ways. You dealt with the amplitude, you dealt with all the parameters of sound in an independent way. The pitch, the volume or the amplitude, the rhythmic structure, the envelope. So you analyze sound in order to make it.
And it's a different way of thinking about making music, I think. Because, I mean, you're talking about the science of audio here, sort of the engineering aspect of it. But you're also a musician. I mean, you're someone who creates music, and you're talking about bringing these two rather different areas of expertise together.
Exactly. I have to say, it was a female ear. Because a lot of people looked at the machines as a very macho kind of thing. I used to call it motorcycle talk. You know, and people talk tech. But for me, I wanted that instrument to be sensual and feminine. My job, I saw, was to find the beauty and the sensuality that was inherent in that machinery. My early music was called Waves because I used a compositional form that I thought was very feminine. It was the build, a long build to an audible climax and then a receding. It's a sensual form and it's also a natural form.
And I assume the sexual metaphor that you are playing out is that's a deliberate analogy you're making.
You can't avoid it. You can't avoid it. It was there. You have to understand, I was in love with that machine. You know, it was.
I also want to ask you about the title track of your Lixiviation CD. First of all, what does the word Lixiviation mean?
Oh, I was afraid you'd ask that. That particular piece was actually done as a film score for an abstract, a recording of Mercury moving. It was sculptor Ronald Mallory, who's famous for his Mercury sculptures. I met Ronald back in my Berkeley days. He was out from New York. Actually, it was his opening in New York that got me to New York. I played Buchla synthesizer at his opening. And this piece, Lixiviation, was a film of his Mercury sculptures. It was very abstract. It was light. And we found that word, really. It had to do with separating alloys or metals. It's a very abstract scientific process, but we liked the sound of it. And it seemed to embody the metallic sensibility of this project, you know, with the Mercury.
So then I guess your challenge is, so how do you turn that into music?
I loved working with picture. And everything was suggested a poetry. You know, an image, you could now make a sound that married that image so perfectly. Ideas could be interpreted in sound. Images could be interpreted in sound, and like very literally. You know, when the mercury flowed across, you'd make the sound of mercury flowing. There must be a sound for that. The piece works, I think, even separate from the soundtrack.
Now, the reissue of your Seven Waves album includes some bonus tracks of the very first album you recorded, Voices of Packaged Souls, which was a collaboration that you did with the sculptor Harold Paris. Can you tell me about that collaboration?
As I look back, because now I have a historical perspective on my life, and I see the origins of a lot of my sound design really were there innocently in the beginning. Harold was a sculptor. He was fascinated by my playing of the synthesizer, and he said, let's do a project together. It was called Voices of Packaged Souls. And he noticed that I could interpret things, and so he gave me a list of poetic titles, the sound of heat, the sound of cold. All of these images, for me, were just inspirations. And so I used early Buchla, I used the computer at Stanford, and I used some music concrete. My job was to make the sound of these things.
Now, one of the tracks that really jumped out at me was Sounds of Bones Growing.
Right.
Very evocative. Can you tell me about this piece?
Yeah, it really does sound like bones growing to me. You know, it's got that kind of organic stretching quality.
Well, it sounds a little like marching when it first starts, and then it escalates into something else.
Suzanne Chani is a pianist and music composer. Her early electronic work is featured on an album called Lixiviation. She talked with Steve Paulson. And this is Chani with a piece called Butterflies from her CD Pianissimo 3.